There's no doubt that George Floyd's brutal death in police custody last month has ignited a mass protest movement on a scale not seen since the 1960s, but it remains to be seen just what kind of change will come to pass. With us now is WBGO contributor Bob Henley. Bob is a City Hall reporter for the Chief Leader and has been covering the issue of race and policing for the last 30 years. Thanks for joining us, Bob. In the Floyd case, the officers were fired, arrested, and charged.
Yeah, that is unusual. Police officers in the United States have tremendous legal advantages and protections under the law. They have, of course, sovereign immunity, which is goes back to the common law concept that king can do no wrong. It's hard to prosecute the government. Then there's also qualified immunity, which is the legal concept that police can't be held legally liable for violating someone's civil rights. And then if that isn't enough, talk about belts and suspenders, they often are indemnified. That is to say that if their actions aren't criminal but make them vulnerable to a civil case for police misconduct, the local government or state government will step up and carry the burden there as well. And then, of course, on top of all of that, in the political world, there are the PBA police unions, which have a tremendous amount of clout depending on the city you're in.
You mentioned that some of the biggest impediments to police accountability is the way that both existing federal and state laws currently limit the prosecution of police misconduct. What kind of reforms are being contemplated now, and to what degree do police reform advocates have bipartisan support?
Well, right now in Congress, we have the Justice and Policing Act, which is being advanced by Senator Booker and Congressman Nadler from the Judiciary Committee in the House. And this would really be perhaps the most significant overhaul. And it would require something that you would think would be common sense, which is a national register for bad police behavior, for lawsuits, for cases of criminal behavior. Currently, it's possible to mess up seriously and lose your shield and gun in one state and go somewhere else, even maybe even the next municipality in the same state, and continue working. This registration would also require that this would provide local police chiefs with an ability to do a background check, which doesn't currently exist. There's also a whole bunch of other reforms, ending chokeholds, which is what we saw so tragically in the case of Mr. Floyd. It also would call for increased training. Right now, believe it or not, Doug, in some states, you have to spend more hours to become a cosmetologist than a police officer.
Over the last several days, the protesters and even elected municipal officials across the country have been using the phrase defund the police. How would that work?
Well, I think this is a case of where Twitter has gotten the best of a movement that's got a lot of momentum. It was something that was said in response at the municipal level, where over the years we have seen an increase in funding for police in terms of overtime. And at the same time, across the country, we've seen a rollback in public health, in after-school programs, athletic programs that used to be free to all the kids, right? In urban areas with budget crunches, those things have been removed from And people have to do fundraisers in their local community because there isn't the support. So I think what's meant here is a kind of reprioritization of things, because as it is now, we're putting money towards police when we have issues like chronic homelessness. And often the police are called upon to do these things, like deal with the chronically mentally ill. You may remember that this country made a decision to deinstitutionalize the mentally ill. And so what we've seen is many of these folks are living in our public libraries, are living in our transit systems, they're in our jails. And it's up to the police and corrections officers to deal with the things that we'd rather ignore. So I think what folks are suggesting here is that we fund those priorities and have the police focus on what they do best, and also to better train the police in terms of understanding how to go about doing to deconflict situations and to help them be more connected to the communities they serve, which will actually protect them in the long run.
We've been covering the story of Maurice Gordon, a 28-year-old black man from Poughkeepsie who was shot six times back on May 23rd by a white New Jersey state trooper on the Garden State Parkway in Burlington County after he was stopped for speeding. What's the status of that case?
Well, this week we saw the Attorney General's office release what they have in the way of documentary evidence and all of the exhibits, including 911 tapes and videos that were generated by the police officer's dash cam. There's still a lot of questions that remain. The family, represented by Attorney Wagstaff, are concerned that what was released publicly, it has been redacted, so they're looking for the entirety of the file. The family is also going to conduct an independent autopsy. There's a lot of concern that this took too long to come to light. And, of course, all of this, according to New Jersey state law, has to culminate with it being presented before a grand jury.
Bob Henley, WBGO contributor and reporter for The Chief Leader, where he covers New York City Hall. Thanks as always, Bob.
Thanks, Doug.